Last week on Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm sorry, Carson Palmer just arrived at the game tonight in an inflatable unicorn costume.
I saw that.
What the hell?
That was amazing.
Am I doing meth or was that on
No,
TV?
That actually happened.
Are you also doing meth?
Maybe.
Listen, Donald, I know you're listening. I know eventually you hit the podcast. I appreciate it. It means a lot. Please stop doubling down on this. I'm trying to stick to sports. You're making it so hard. I want to talk about Kareem Hunt so bad.
It's a special day in here on Almost Entirely Sports. It's a wet and wild, wacky Wednesday.
Woo! Hashtag more Warly Warlin is how you make your statements.
Hashtag wet and wild.
Hashtag wet and
hashtag
wild.
Wet and wild.
Hashtag wet and wild Charlie Carlin is how we know that you are on board with the Charlie Carlin experience.
Well, I got off the sugary pop a while ago. And then, so if I was drinking sweet tea, it'd kind of defeat the purpose. So I kind of just got used to unsweet tea now. And even when I taste a little bit of sweet tea, it just, way too much. Now that you guys, now you guys know about my... I don't know what was so funny there.
My favorite memory of the last of this last run of Royals players is every time this year that I said they're going to be a 500 team, and then everyone yelled at me.
Of course, you make it about you. God, it's okay. I know. I heard Lil Yachty before, but I can't say I could name a single song. So you're not alone in that.
God,
you know what? I don't think Gears has ever talked to me on air. What a great moment.
Well, that was
the show.
Well, that was Charlie. That was Charlie. So it didn't work.
So still overdue.
In case you somehow missed that over on Facebook Live, you can fast forward later on to about the hour in mark. You can watch me eat a banana.
At this point, no one would be surprised if Kareem Hunt grew wings and flew out of Arrowhead Stadium in Week 4. You know what? I'll say it. I would be surprised.
I have the note card you sent me. I'm going to read it right now. I do believe Patrick Mahomes is better than Alex Smith. Will you release my family now?
Hey, Beards, it's John Skipper. Listen, I've been hearing that show you've been doing. Wasn't super into whenever your host boy read 538 for 5 minutes. But that hiccup that he just had, here's what we're going to do. We're going to mail you a blank checkbook. You get as many people on the payroll as you need to, and you tell me what their salaries are going to be. And you know what I will say? I, John Skipper, head of ESPN, Grand Poobah, you tell me to jump, and I will ask you how high.
Isn't this a sports show?
Here are 7 incredible sex positions. We can't wait to show Jesus when he finally returns to Earth.
Almost entirely.
Oh, can I get an amen?
Amen!
Good work, Beards.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Me and my housemates were taking like family photos around the dumpster because it was really just very fitting.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Curtis might have said the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me in my life. She said, the more like ridiculous what you're wearing is, the less ridiculous it seems on you. And that is something that I've been waiting to hear for so long.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
You're the best, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
Oh, I said I'm the best. I love talking to him. I would have said that even if he didn't say that I was the best. But that's sort of a symbiotic relationship there. He sounded the best. I think he's the best. No, Brandon, you're the best. Okay, I'm the best.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Wow. Some really good production work this week, Beards. Really good highlights. Last week was a long week, but we had a good amount of highlights to choose from, it seems like.
There was a lot of stuff that was not included.
All right, so...
I say that every week.
You do.
But that also then just cycles into the liners and stuff.
Yeah.
So it spreads the wealth.
It does. Listen, so today's show might be bad. Not because we're not trying really hard, but because it hurts to talk. Which is like, you know, going to a jazz concert. And then somebody says, hey, I'd love to perform for you, but it hurts whenever I play the saxophone. My voice is my instrument, and my voice is just holding on by a thread. We're going to get you through 2 hours, so we have some really good stuff to talk about today. We're going to get you ready for a Chiefs actual football game that's happening tonight, Washington at Arrowhead. Looking forward to that. And the Royals season ended yesterday. And I want to talk about that also, because there's a lot of interesting things that came out of that and places where we go from now. But if it sounds like I'm speaking quietly, I am. I'm just as close to the microphone as I can get. You're just probably going to just make my microphone a little more sensitive than it usually is. And we're going to get through that. Today's going to just be, it's going to be a different feel. We're going to have a different atmosphere for today's show. Just a little grittier. Also, I have no idea how to talk about everything that's currently going on outside of the world of sports. Like today, we found out about the stuff from Vegas late last night. Apparently, Tom Petty has died. There was another active shooter situation. I think it was on USC's campus. Like, I don't even know what to do with any of that. I'm very happy to talk about things outside of sports. Obviously, it's the name of the show, and like my whole thing here is that I'm happy to go out there and talk about those outside things. But I but just sort of talking about tragedy doesn't really. I don't want to make tragedy a talking point right now. So I don't know. I don't really have any like call to action or any like strong statement or anything other than I think today, and maybe this will be different tomorrow, but I think today we're just going to be talking about the silly stuff because I'm sure that's what a lot of people are looking for at this point, because it's just been kind of a hard day if you're paying attention to everything else that's going on. So there's that. Eventually, also, I guess I need to talk about the fact that I went to late night in Lawrence, because we haven't talked about that on this show. I talked about it on Sports Sunday yesterday over on 810. Spoiler alert, I touched a little Yachty. I grazed hands with a little boat. It was simply a dream come true. We'll talk about that later also. One more thing for you, Beards. I was working on something up until like the very beginning of the show. So
you were pushing it.
I know I was. So I didn't have a chance to say this beforehand. But if at any point I make gross sounds that can be attributed to my throat caving in,
I should just cut you off and start playing this?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. I want you to just mark it, and then if there's a lot of these by the end of the show,
we'll just compile them for
tomorrow. I just want to hear them at the end of the show or the beginning of the show tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can make that happen.
Because I'm currently just, I don't even know what happened. Like, I didn't feel sick yesterday. I just knew my throat hurt. And then this morning, I had a show from 4 to 6 a.m. over on Sports Radio 810, doing Chiefs, like, pre-game. I was challenging to the pipes. And, like, I don't know, can you hear a cough drop, like, hitting my teeth? Is that an audible sound that makes its way through?
A little bit. Yeah.
It
pops up on the sound file, but it's not.
Great. Fantastic. I'm just saying, like that, I'm sorry. If you hear it and you're like, oh God, that's gross.
We're apologizing right beforehand.
Yeah. This is a preemptive apology for all of the gross sounds my mouth is going to make throughout the show today. Put that on a billboard somewhere. The Chiefs play tonight. The Royals season ended. I think we'll actually start with Chiefs here. I know I told you otherwise before the show started, Beards. But most people hear this show by way of the Chiefs stuff that gets podcasted, and frankly, I just want people to hear Last Week On. I want as many people as possible to hear that, so I think we're going to start with the Chiefs today. We'll talk some Royals later on. And if you don't hear the Royals segment and you want to hear what we say about that, you can always go find Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. But today's going to be a long show. I have a feeling. Not because I don't want to be here, but because it hurts. But we play through pain here. This is something that's been always established here on ESPN Kansas City. It's where we play through pain. And thus I don't want to. So the Chiefs played tonight, and the NFL is crazy. Looking back on yesterday, I mean, just there are a handful of things that are kind of small stories to us that would be full stories if we were in these markets. The Patriots and the Jets are both 2-2. The Bills are leading the AFC East. That's great news for the Chiefs, because as many games as the Chiefs can keep between themselves and the Patriots, the more the better. I'm gonna sneeze. Like, that's what this show is. That's what we're doing right now. I'm about to sneeze.
Sneeze on air if you do.
Fine. Deal. Are you happy?
Thank you.
You're
I can
welcome.
Use that now.
You're welcome.
I'll use that for something.
I was not going to let that get through until you asked. But I'm sorry. I mean, someone right now is listening to the show and be like, what the hell is going on? Also, if you want to get sneezed on, Wednesday, we go to Pegas. I'm doing the show live from there. Whatever's left of my corpse will be there. Anyway, the Patriots are 2-2. They lose again at home, this time to Houston, where the Chiefs will be playing next week. Very interesting setup there. A couple of teams, the two teams who've beaten the Patriots, will be facing off in Houston next Sunday night. Looking forward to that one already. But now the Bills are leading the AFC East. The Chiefs are the only undefeated team in football because the Bills went to Atlanta, won in Atlanta, knocking the Falcons down to 3-1. So the Chiefs tonight with a win are the only team in the NFL that will be undefeated after week four. Marcus Mariota got hurt. He's day-to-day. Matt Castle may be out in this rotation again. Rookie running backs Chris Carson in Seattle and Dalvin Cook in Minnesota were both severely injured yesterday. They're both out for the year. Mitchell Trubisky is going to start next Monday night for the Bears because the Bears looked terrible. Like, I mean, there's a thousand things going on in the NFL that I find supremely interesting. Arguably, though, nothing more interesting than the AFC West. The Chargers are 0-4. They're bad. But with the other two teams in this division, the Patriots. Good God, yeah. Let's make the AFC West one click harder. The Broncos and the Raiders. They played yesterday in Denver, and the Raiders have a lot of problems. And I told you if you heard me on Sports Sunday yesterday, and if not, you know, I might have said this over here on Friday too. Who knows? It all blends together. I said I was rooting for the Broncos in that game, not with any passion, and I also sort of did feel the urge to root for just the road team because I want as much chaos as possible to be there in this division. But I was rooting for the Broncos yesterday before the game began. I was going to say I'd rather just have the home team hold their own ground and let everything kind of just average out while the Chiefs try to be better than that. But now that game went the way it did, I think having less concern today than you did yesterday about the Raiders is completely fair and reasonable. The run defense is not good. Derek Carr got hurt. The Raiders said he has back spasms and he should be okay. Tony Romo was calling that game and he had an element of kind of familiarity. He was getting nervous about speculating too much, but it looked a lot like the injury that effectively ended Tony Romo's career. But it sounds like Carr is going to be fine. But that was a scary moment for the Raiders. Amari Cooper, I believe, leads the league in drops currently. He didn't play the ball very well towards the end of the game. He doesn't play the ball very well at all right now. He's really fallen off the earth. Michael Crabtree didn't play yesterday. Oakland has been 2 of 23 on third down conversions in the last 2 weeks. That's under 9%. Those are issues with the Raiders' offense. We knew coming into this year, we talked about this plenty of times, that the Raiders' defense has problems. And I did say that I thought the Raiders' offense would be a little bit of a paper tiger, that they would have a bit of a setback this year, because they simply their defense was so bad last year that they had free extra possessions that other teams weren't allowed to have. So that counts for its own advantage the offense was given. But I expected that. So I expected that to regress some. But what we've actually seen from them this year has been even worse than that. The offense is slow moving. Marshawn Lynch, the boost that he gave those first couple of weeks really fell off. Especially at Denver. The Broncos' defense, we might have underrated. We knew it was going to be pretty good still, but the general consensus was that it was also going to take a step backwards while the offense continued to do nothing in particular in Denver. I don't think we underrated the Broncos' offense, really. I think Trevor Siemian is still who we thought he was. I don't think you should freak out about a couple of good home performances from Trevor Siemian. And I guess, you know, if you want to at least see my consistencies. I think I have a very similar mindset about Simeon as I do Alex Smith, not as players, but as what we've seen from them in the large sample size is the most realistic thing that we can extrapolate from that. So I'm not particularly fearful of Trevor Siemian, although I guess, you know, he's younger. He has a chance to grow some, but I don't expect that in any way whatsoever. I'm not afraid of the Broncos offense. I'm a little afraid of the Broncos defense, but Oakland is just surprisingly disappointing here, which is only good for the Chiefs. Also, the AFC West could still have three teams make the playoffs because no one in the AFC North is getting in. The Steelers will win the division, and no one else is making it from there. The Browns, Bengals, and Ravens, three really gross teams right now. And the AFC South might actually get a second team. Whoever, like the Texans and the Titans and the Colts and the Jaguars have all had good showings, and then they've all had really terrible ones. The AFC East might end up with the Bills maybe sneaking in. They're winning the division right now. The Bills and Patriots perhaps have a chance. Otherwise, if the Bills, essentially, if the Bills don't win the wild card, I certainly do think that they will lose a bunch of games. Right now, if the Bills aren't penciled in a wild card spot, then a third AFC West team is. It's crazy, but it's just where the AFC is right now. This whole league is so topsy-turvy. There are so many things here that you just could not have possibly expected. Especially including all of the drama in the AFC West. The Chargers are worse than we thought they were going to be. The Broncos defense is better than I expected it. The offense is about the same. The Raiders all around look worse than I thought they would. I still think winning in Oakland on Thursday Night Football is going to be very, very difficult. But I feel better about it now than I did on Saturday. And the Broncos are such a different team at home. So there's a lot going on in the AFC West that's worth your time, that's worth your consideration, that I'm very interested by. We'll talk about a bunch of actual Chief stuff here in just a little bit. But those are some of the stories that really stuck with me out of yesterday's action. Where again, and we talked about this last week, every single team in football has real flaws. And not even flaws at this point. Every team in baseball, except for the Chiefs, has a gross misstep. And really, everybody except for like the Browns and the Chargers have had an upset victory, or at least a win that you could buy into a little bit. But everybody except for the Chiefs, on the resume, and I know this isn't the BCS, I know the resume isn't something to worry about here right now, but by resumes, the Chiefs are the only team in the league to not have at least one, like, embarrassing misstep. I said last week, I was more fearful of Atlanta than anyone should be of the Chiefs. Atlanta had the Bills at home, a team that traded away their best receiver and then cut their second best receiver, if memory serves. Maybe they traded Robert Woods also, I can't remember. But they lose two of their best weapons. They're trying to move Tyrod Taylor in the offseason. They go into Atlanta and beat the Falcons at home. Even the best teams, who are the best teams? Atlanta loses the Bills at home. New England loses to the Chiefs and the Texans at home. The Steelers, they look like a different team on the road. A lot of flawed football teams in the NFL, which is good news for the Chiefs, because even though the Chiefs are certainly a flawed team, right now they haven't let any of those cost them a game. So we'll talk about some of that whenever we come back here. The Chiefs just have to, at this point, simply soldier on, winning despite their flaws, instead of caving into them like the rest of the league has. We're gonna hear from Nick Jacobs next. I talked to him on Sports Sunday, but I'm assuming that some of you missed that. Maybe it's just one or two of you. I know that most people just you hear my name associated with any sort of radio, and you follow me like I'm the Pied Piper. But I'm assuming some of you missed that. So whenever we come back, we're going to hear from Nick Jacobs. We're talking about a ton of Chiefs-related things, really, like every single unit on the field, and then preview tonight's action. In prime time, the Chiefs have a chance to become the only 4-0 team in the league. I'm going to grab a cough drop whenever we come back. We'll talk to Nick.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Some people click this podcast and it says, like, more on Spencer Ware to injured reserve, which isn't official yet, but whatever, and breaking down the Chiefs trade. And like, all right, hell yeah, Chiefs trade.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And they clicked it, and we're 10 minutes in, and I'm about to explain the story of this pineapple hat that I'm wearing.
On ESPN Kansas City.
It is that kind of day, for sure. And I'm sorry if you are disturbed by my perceived lack of energy. It's not really that. Is that if I speak louder than this, my throat begins, I can only assume, caving in from the inside. It's just, everybody gets sick and on October 2nd, right, when it's 85 degrees outside, prime cold weather. Normal to be allergic to something in the air on October 2nd whenever it's 85 degrees out. I'm annoyed. Something that's not annoying, though, Nick Jacobs. What a segue.
Great segue.
Thank you. Thank you, Beards. Sorry, that's just how I feel. I talked to Nick yesterday over on Sports Radio 810 for Sports Sunday, and we cover a huge, huge wealth of Chiefs topics. And I had a little like summary of like the throw to the actual thing here, and now I think I'm pretty sure it's just gone now. So we're gonna kind of freewheel it. I'm pretty sure we started talking about Alex Smith, but I promise, overall, altogether, Nick and I covered everything you could possibly want to know about the Chiefs and tonight's game.
Well, it comes down to kind of what you and I chatted about last time I was on with you, is that I wanted to see 2013 Chiefs Colts Alex Smith show up.
Right.
And in that New England Patriots game, he did.
Yep.
He had time, he had protection, he felt comfortable and confident in the pocket. He was willing to push the ball down the field to Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill for two long 70-yard touchdowns. He hit both of them in stride to where they weren't waiting on the football. And Alex showed that capability. Mm-hmm. But he showed that the pocket and protection is going to decide what he does or doesn't feel comfortable doing. Because as you saw sometimes against the Eagles, and then again with the Chargers, with some of the speed they had around the edges and the way they attacked the guards, that Alex didn't feel as comfortable at times, so he was willing to bail out of the pocket quicker before some of those routes had developed. And teams know that, and they're going to continue to see that on tape, and they're going to continue to attack some of those things, especially based on the formation. So that's going to be the Chiefs coaching staff's job to counterbalance it. I think Alex is a little bit more aggressive this year. He has better touch on his deep ball to where he's putting it in the right spot. So, yes, they are right that he does have playmakers, but my thing is he had Jamal Charles his first 2 years, and he had, and then he had Macklin for a while, and he had Dwayne Bowe, and he's had Kelsey. So, I mean, he's always had playmakers. To me, it's always come down to the offensive line needing to give him a clean pocket so he feels comfortable with his mechanics being right.
Isn't that the very definition of him being the same Alex Smith, though? Because I don't think we've ever really had huge doubts about his physical or mental inability to play quarterback. It's just sort of been that whenever he gets uncomfortable, he gets really obviously uncomfortable, and then that causes problems. I think for me, that's always kind of been the biggest concern about Alex Smith, and the fact that he looks great whenever his offensive line looks great isn't all that encouraging to me, I guess, because how often are you going to get that type of performance? I guess twice since he's been here at this point, right?
Yeah, he definitely had it against the Patriots and the Colts, and I'd say there's been, I think, if I remember correctly, he's had five 300-yard-plus games in his career, so I would say five here in Kansas City, maybe six, that you really kind of could lean on. And you're right in that aspect to where he is the same quarterback in some ways, but in other ways, there were times last year where he did have time in the pocket and he wouldn't make that throw, or he wouldn't trust that route, or willing to stay in the pocket. There were a handful of times against the Eagles where, and I even put it on Twitter, where he stood tall in that pocket even when it was collapsing and delivered some of those strikes. So for him, it seems like he's trying to fight who he was and some of his tendencies to become the quarterback that he knows he needs to be to stay a starter in this league.
I think that's a really interesting way to put it. He's trying to fight his programming. But are you particularly optimistic that he'll be successful in that at any point throughout this season?
I think in the Eagles game, there showed some ability there. Mm-hmm. And in the Chargers game, I think he kind of took a step or two back at times. So I think it's going to be kind of a pendulum swing. I think there's going to be some ups and downs along the year, and I think it's just going to be a battle for him. And I'm curious to see where he's at by the time 16 games are finished, because if he can battle that, then the Chiefs have one of their better chances in the playoffs in quite some time, mm-hmm. because the Chiefs are in the driver's seat right now to where they're facing a lot of teams that if they beat them, like the Raiders and the Steelers, that they're going to be in the driver's seat and they're going to be the ones holding the tiebreakers when it comes playoff time about who comes through Arrowhead maybe for the AFC Championship since they beat the Patriots.
And that is the reason to be optimistic, and I don't mean to come through as a Debbie Downer, because they are in the driver's seat. They do look like they have an actual contending team. I had somebody tweet me this week and said, like, hey, man, love listening to the podcast where you talk about how terrible this 3-0 team is. And I pointed out gently but firmly that, you know, saying the Chiefs are still 3-0 and then ending a show is not a great way to fill 2 hours. I want to be optimistic so bad, and I feel like every time we get there with Alex Smith, it eventually falls apart a little bit. Let's go to the guy behind him right now. Kareem Hunt might, I don't know if he's super easy to talk about or super difficult to talk about, because it's, we can do that. Well, Chiefs 3-0 and Kareem Hunt is very, very good thing. But I'm curious what you've seen, especially because you pay extra attention to the offensive line, what you've seen how Kareem Hunt has used what he's gotten from the offensive line and what he's done specifically in the ground game that's made him so tremendous through these first three games of his career.
Sure, yeah, and the thing with him is that the Chiefs' guard play right now struggles at times to mm-hmm. be able to reach on the edge, to be able to seal some things off, to be able to keep that edge from collapsing at times. They have a little bit of trouble with that. But Kareem Hunt, what he's able to do is he has a different, from training camp to an actual game situation, that guy has a different gear. Mm-hmm. He didn't have that gear when I was watching him in training camp when I went up there for a couple of those practices. He didn't have that same switch that just turned on like that. But he has it come game time. And to combine that with his vision and his balance, that's made him a really good running back. Because there's been times where the offensive line may miss the block here, or a tight end or receiver missed it, and he turned what should have been a negative 4-yard play for most running backs, he turned it into a plus 10 and got a first down and moved the chains. He just has a special ability to keep his balance, to take a big hit, still maintain a center of gravity and still be able to make a play from it and find this explosiveness that he can just stop and start from time to time. And Kareem he's been a big part of why this offense hasn't had the issues that it did, where it had a lot of lulls. I mean, there's some lulls against the Chargers, but collectively they haven't had a lot of three and outs this year. And Kareem Hunt has been a really big part of that. And he's been a big jolt for that offense, both in the run and pass.
Let's stay with the offensive line, because right now it looks like the Chiefs may be without Eric Fisher against Washington. Just how big of a deal would that be from your perspective?
Well, not necessarily from a Redskins perspective, but to keep an eye on for the rest of the year, is when offensive linemen and defensive linemen start having back issues, that's a bigger thing for down the road that you have to keep an eye on, because mm-hmm. Dontari Poe struggled with that. After 2014, I mean, he struggled, and he really, in my opinion, he never fully regained his form that he had in 12, 13, and a majority of 14.
Yeah.
And Dontari is probably going to have those, because that's if you're a big guy that's probably more than 280 to the 400-pound range, you just have back issues. That's just the reality, whether you do or don't play football, because you're carrying so much excessive weight. And for Fisher to have those back issues like that now, especially at this part in the season, I hope it's not something that lingers. And I hope the Chiefs give it as much time as they need. But I know their contingency plan that they've said in past years from being out there is that Schwartz is more than capable of moving over to left tackle, and he did some work at left tackle this year whenever I was up there at camp. So I wouldn't be surprised if he potentially moved to left tackle if they needed to.
Interesting.
And I don't think there would be a ton of issue there. There may be some hiccups along the way from having to switch footwork and everything, but I think Schwartz is one of the more capable guys that could do that without a lot of issue. But then the question becomes at right tackle, is Cameron Irving going in there, or if Parker Anger comes back, does Weissman move over to right tackle? Because he'd played that when he was in Dallas, he'd played tackle, and he'd been one of their backup tackles last year in Kansas City. So that's going to be kind of the bigger question coming down the road.
So let's stick with that for a second, actually, because I didn't have a chance to talk to you throughout the years of Eric Fisher trying to find his actual consistent place. It seemed like it was a really big transition for him going from left tackle in college to right tackle in the NFL, then to left tackle in the NFL. But you say that you're pretty confident that Mitchell Schwartz is able to make that transition on short notice. Exactly how much does it take for a lineman to go from right tackle to left tackle, or for a guy to move from guard to tackle in a pinch? What do those changes entail? How difficult can that be, and why?
Well, it's just, I mean, the easiest analogy I can use is if you eat with your right hand all the time, and then whether it's in the middle of the game or within a week's time, you have to eat with your left hand, and you just have to deal with it. So, I mean, for an offensive lineman, your kick step's not going to feel the same when you're going out to block a guy. So whenever you're doing your kick step, you don't have that muscle memory built in to where you have that repetition and thousands of repetitions of being used to that. You're having to punch a little bit differently. You may have to lead with your left hand instead of leading with your right hand based on how the defender is.
Right.
And so you may not feel as comfortable and as confident with your jolt of your left hand into that guy, to where maybe he accidentally is used to using his right hand. And then if he puts his right hand out too far, maybe he overextends himself. And then at that point he's off balance. And then Khalil Mack takes a club to you and knocks you on your rear.
Right.
So that's going to be some of the bigger adjustments in that regard. And then also, whenever you're maybe doing reach blocks to where you have to get around the defender and try to seal him off to give the running back an alley, that may be another thing to where it just doesn't feel familiar when you're having to use your left foot first whenever you'd use your right foot on the other side. Or if he's pulling like they like to do with the left tackle, then it's just going to feel opposite of everything you've done. And that may make you hesitate for maybe a tenth of a second, half of a second, and it didn't have that natural ability to where it's not like breathing, where you actually think about each time you take a breath.
Right. Well, on the other side of the line for the Chiefs, it seems like they just have an absolute wealth of talent with that defensive line. Even though Chris Jones is still kind of working his way back, which is amazing because he's been so impactful when he's been on the field. What have you seen from this defensive line, specifically the front line, so far this year?
Yeah, the defensive line, I noticed that coming in here, I thought it was going to be a really big strength of theirs, because this is one of the better rotations that they've had collectively of the six guys in quite some time. I know the Chiefs at times had four guys that they could rely on, maybe then somebody got hurt and then you're now down to three, and then somebody else got hurt and now you're down to two that you can rely on. But, I mean, knock on wood, they've stayed healthy and they've had a consistent rotation to where, I mean, Benny Logan at nose tackle, I know people won't believe this, but in a lot of ways, he's been stronger and stouter at the point of attack, and he's blown up a lot of centers that Dontari Poe used to be able to do before his back injury.
Yep.
But since his back injury, Dontari just didn't have that same pop. He had the same athletic ability, but in Dontari, I felt that he would be better in a 4-3 system with where his back's at this point in his career. And he's not had the impact down in Atlanta that I'm sure they've been hoping for and thought they'd get. But here in Kansas City, I mean, Benny Logan is stout. He's got a great bull rush. He disrupts so much of what that team does. Because I remember one player over the past 3 weeks, he bull rushed the center and the guard multiple times, back into the quarterback's lap on pass rushes, and then he bull rushed them again to where when the guard was trying to pull around it, he had to take a wider, deeper step. So then the running back has to wait a second or 2 seconds longer. So at that point, his middle linebackers are already in good pursuit there. They have a clean lane to where they're not fighting through traffic to make that pursuit. And just doing simple things like that just disrupts so much. For Logan, that's been great. Alan Bailey's still as strong and as stout as ever, and he's been disruptive. And Nunez Rochez, he's become a heck of a bull rusher on top of some of his finesse pass rushing moves that he has. And when he comes in certain rotational reps, I mean, he has a huge impact on that football field. And then, like you said, Chris Jones, he's building up that stamina since he didn't get to practice a lot in training camp. So if they let that happen in that way, then Chris Jones is going to be really fresh for that second half of the stretch. And that's going to worry a lot of football teams down the road to have somebody that fresh from week 8 through 16.
Talking to Nick Jacobs, he's at Jacobs71 on Twitter. A couple other guys who will hopefully be back and fresh for that second half of the season, Tom Bahali, maybe also Dowdy Nicholas. And right now we know the Chiefs are not going to have D Ford against Washington. How do you see the pass rush on Monday night kind of coming together? And then do you think the Chiefs are maybe a little bit frustrated with their decision to put Tom Bahali on the PUP list?
I don't think they're frustrated by putting Tom on the PUP list, because I think they want Tom, but as we said, to be fresh for that week 8 through 16, well, probably week 9 through 16, the playoff range.
Right.
To where any rest you give his knees right now, I think they're completely good with. Because the biggest thing Andy Reid's shown over his career is for that first 9 games, Andy Reid can out-scheme a lot of coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's not really at the point where they may necessarily need Tom. But then when Tom comes back, they can throw some wrinkles in there, and he can help them down the stretch. So in that regard, I don't think they're kicking themselves one bit. I think they personally probably think that they can get by, okay, and it's not going to be a huge deal for that first 8 or 9 games. And to this point, it really hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, obviously D Ford's been in there, though. So, I mean, Zombo's going to give them he'll do a good job in the run game for them if he comes in for Ford. Pass rush-wise, Zombo may not give you much, and then that may be where they maybe potentially in pass rushing situations use, you know, Tano Pathanio. And maybe that's where we start seeing him finally get some snaps and some reps on defense to where maybe he's able to make an impact in that regard while they continue to work on his strength against the run. And that may be how they rotate that aspect of it. But against the Redskins on Monday night, from what I've watched, Kirk Cousins, you can rush him with 4 down linemen if you want to. So in the Chiefs nickel and dime packages, they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing for Cousins is that interior pressure. If you can collapse that pocket from guard to guard into his face, he doesn't step up into his throws if he feels uncomfortable.
Mm.
And then so he becomes wildly inaccurate with most of his passes. And then he wants to try to sidearm them, and he thinks he has Brett Favre's arm, and he doesn't.
Right.
But he tries to throw it like he does, and he reminds me so much of Phillip Rivers last week, to where Rivers doesn't have the same arm that he used to just 2 years ago. Rivers had a much stronger arm than what he does now. He can still make some throws, but he needs a clean pocket to be able to rotate and torque into those throws and have even balance in his footwork. And Cousins is that same way. And he gets really uncomfortable when that happens. And then the Eagles brought some overload blitzes in week 1, and all 3 passes, he was wildly inaccurate, and one ended up being an interception because he underthrew one guy, overthrew another, and then overthrew Crowder, which I think turned into an interception for the Eagles. So for Cousins specifically, it's all about that defensive tackle, nose tackle, pass rush. So that's really where the Chiefs, in all honesty, their outside linebackers this week, I think there really need to be more edge defenders against the run.
Hmm.
Let your D tackles be the guys who push that pocket on Cousins. And I think the Chiefs can shut down a lot of what the Redskins like to do on offense.
Last week, whenever they beat the Raiders, Cousins had a really nice stat line, I think kind of a little bit of an Alex Smithy stat line, actually, when you look at it a little bit closer. He had 25 completions on 30 attempts and threw for 365 yards. But I think it was Kian Fahey that had it on Twitter that before the game was even over, something like 150 of Cousins' yards had come after the catch, and like 110 of those were on screens. That's also those are some loose numbers. I can't remember exactly. But there were a lot of screen passes that picked up a bunch of yards last week for Washington. How are the Chiefs equipped to handle all of that against the screen game?
The screen game, I think, from what I watched the coaches film yesterday, the Raiders have trouble with screens just because of that defensive scheme. I mean, the Chiefs, even before Ken Norton, when Jamal Charles had like 4 screen passes for touchdowns against the Raiders in 2013.
Right.
And that's just been one of the Raiders' Achilles heels. They're really bad against screen passes. And so the reason the Redskins were doing part of that is because of how the corners were playing. It was easy money for them. And also, it allowed Cousins at times to get in a rhythm. He doesn't have to think. He doesn't have to read the defense. He doesn't have to worry about any of the edge pressure from Khalil Mack. And then he can just catch it, throw it out there, catch it, throw it out there. Because Cousins really likes that from what I saw on tape. He wants that ball out quick. He really doesn't want to have to stand tall in that pocket and have to go through a lot of things that may end up breaking down his mechanics. And then he's out of rhythm and out of sync. And that doesn't do well for Washington. So I don't think the Chiefs are going to have a ton of issue with that. Where the Redskins are predictable is they like to run on third down a majority of the time, as I tweeted out earlier this week. I mean, if I remember correctly, I think one of the followers did the numbers, and it was somewhere between 74 or 80% of the time the Redskins run on first down.
Interesting.
And the times that they didn't was because they were behind against the Eagles by a touchdown or 2 touchdowns. So the Redskins like to run on first down. And since they like to do that, you got to take that away from them immediately. So if you take that to where it's like 2nd and 5 or 3rd and 5, and if you make it 2nd and 10 or 3rd and 10, then that sets their offense back, and Cousins has to go with some of their deeper routes. And then at that point, you collapse that pocket on him, and that offense really is out of sync and falls apart a lot of the time. So the key to that is taking away their runs on the first down. And then after that, then you start collapsing that interior pocket on Cousins, and mechanically he doesn't perform as well. And those to me are the two keys to beating the Redskins and shutting down that offense.
How do you think the game plays out?
I fully expect the Chiefs to win. I think Greg Minunski, the defensive coordinator for the Redskins, he's playing with a much better defense, because he was the defensive coordinator when the Chiefs played the Colts in the playoff game and the Chiefs hung 44 on him. I think he has a much better overall defense. I think the Redskins are a fundamentally sound defense, especially against the run, so I think that's going to be a big struggle. You can't really misdirect them like you could with the Eagles or the Chargers at times. They're actually pretty good at defending some of the jet sweeps, and the Redskins defense, that's really where the matchup is, the Chiefs offense versus the Redskins defense for me. And I think the Chiefs are going to have to pass the ball to be able to run it later. And I think the biggest thing is for the Redskins defense, you got to isolate their linebackers against your running backs and tight ends. That's where a lot of teams have success against them and put up a lot of points. So I think the Chiefs need to focus on that matchup. But at the end of the day, I wrote it down this morning on my pick-ems. I had the Chiefs 31-17 over the Redskins. So, I mean, we'll see what ends up happening. But I personally fully expect the Chiefs to be playing Pittsburgh at 5-0. That's what I expect in a couple weeks.
Cause
I watched the Texans too, and I think Sutton can have some fun with Deshaun Watson.
That was before this Sunday, so I hope that hasn't changed. But that's Nick Jacobs. He's at Jacobs71 on Twitter. Really good stuff from him in several different arenas there. We'll talk about it in more depth when we come back. But the idea of how this offensive line could get shifted around depending on who is and isn't active, how Tom Bahali's absence is not a problem still, how the Chiefs are going to be able to manufacture pressure and what kind of pressure they need to be manufacturing tonight against Washington. All really good stuff there from Nick that we will break down and talk about here a little bit more coming up at the top of next hour. Also, we're eventually going to talk about the Royals. The end of the era officially came yesterday. The Royals finish a mere game below 500. I'm not going to flaunt the fact that I was right about the Royals from the very beginning, but later on in the show, I may have a short montage from before the season began of exactly how I nailed it. Maybe. I don't know. That might not exist. That's next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm not calling for Alex Smith to get shipped out of town.
With Joshua Briscoe.
I will carry Alex Smith to the airport my back, like a koala.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back. Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. A couple of bits of housekeeping. Some thank yous to give, actually. Thank you to... Oh, no. My computer backfired. I had a plan set up, and it just made a mistake. Still have a plan. Thank you to the Premier Auto Group, Premier Mazda, and Premier Volvo, new sponsor of this show. They've been supporting ESPN Kansas City for a while now, but they are now officially a sponsor of this show. So, huge thank you to the Premier Auto Group. I drive a Volvo that actually came from Premier Volvo. I love it, and I hope that we get to continue to work with them in the future. Thank you to them for supporting this show. Also, kind of a test run on this sort of partnership. Threadbeast sends out these. You sign up for these monthly subscription boxes. You go through their style quiz, and they will they'll ship out all sorts of super interesting different streetwear gear, different clothing options. I'm signed up for it. I'm gonna get a box from them here in a few days. I'll do a live unboxing over on the Jayhawk Nation Facebook page. If you go to threadbeast.com and you set up your first subscription package, your first 1 month, you can just do it for a month. You get your first box if you use the promo code AES50, which is AES50. That gives you an extra $50 in bonus material on top of whatever it is that you've signed up for. They have a bunch of different tiers. You can get the cheapest package, but if you do use the code AES50, you get an extra $50 worth of clothes in your first box. You can do that at any level there.
I like free stuff.
Well, there you go. And then you should go to threadbeast.com. Use the promo code AES50. Go through the style quiz. Look at the kind of stuff they have. And again, it's coming up soon here. I will do an unboxing video over on the Jayhawk Nation Facebook page. And you can see what they sent me after I signed up for my style quiz. I'm very excited about that. So thank you to Threadbeast. Thank you to the Premier Auto Group, Premier Mazda, and Premier Volvo. I'm having a hard time breathing now, which is not great.
That's not a good thing.
It's not great for a radio show. But I just saw a video pop up on 538 during that commercial break, and it popped up so quickly that we're genuinely just going, I'm going to play it from my Chromebook, so the audio quality is going to be great. But the reason I'm playing a video from 538 is because the headline is, Kansas City and Washington have equally good quarterbacks who are polar opposites. This surprised me as a starting point for this theory. Because I've known Kirk Cousins to be very often a relatively short-minded quarterback. Last week against Oakland, Washington won that game by eating up Oakland with yards after the catch and with a ton of screen passes. But we talked about this with Seth Kizer last week. He said, you know, one of the problems the Raiders have had forever is defending the screen game. So Washington sort of was just taking what was there. In reality, Kirk Cousins is a pretty confident deep ball thrower, according to the research here. So this is a little blurb before the video. This is in Week 4's Monday Night Football matchup. Washington takes on Kansas City. The contest is an interesting clash of quarterback styles. Washington's Kirk Cousins, one of the league's best deep ball passers, while Kansas City's Alex Smith is a master of the screen pass. Which style will prevail? To find out more, watch the video above. It's just a little like minute and 15-second video, but I found it very interesting, and to hear the stats backing all this up. So let's hear what 538 had to say about Kirk Cousins and Alex Smith.
This Monday night, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Washington Redskins square off in Kansas City. And we'll be keeping a particular eye on the difference in quarterback styles between Kirk Cousins and Alex Smith. Cousins is a pretty traditional QB who's found particular success slinging the ball deep down the field. He ranks third in the league over the past three seasons in value added on passes that traveled 20 or more yards in the air, creating 18.5 more points than a replacement-level QB. Compare that with Smith. Smith ranks dead last over the past three seasons in the percentage of his passes that traveled over 20 yards through the air. In fact, he hardly ever even throws the ball more than 10 yards downfield. To make up for it though, Smith has thrown more screen passes and other passes behind the line of scrimmage than any other QB in the league over the past three seasons. And under coach Andy Reid, the KC offense has found a way to make it work. Smith is tied with Tom Brady for the most wins of any QB over the past three seasons, and his Chiefs are currently the only undefeated team left in the AFC. We'll see which style of quarterbacking prevails on Monday, but our predictions think Kansas City is a heavy favorite, with a 78% chance of winning the game.
That's 538 on what to expect tonight from Alec Duthan Kirk Cousins. I found that very interesting and a little bit of a surprise. I was not giving Kirk Cousins that kind of credit as a deep ball thrower. I didn't ever really lend him that sort of respect, because I didn't feel like we had seen that nearly as often as the stats show that we have actually seen it. That was a surprise to me. Alternatively, the narrative on Alex Smith this year has changed. The stat that they pulled was from over the last 3 years. The narrative this year has changed. I continue to sort of challenge the idea that Alex Smith is a very different quarterback this year than he's been at every other turn throughout his entire career. But that's where the narratives are right now. I thought it was nice to get some stats to step in and actually inform that conversation. Backing up a little bit to when I talked with Nick Jacobs, several interesting things. First of all, with the offensive line, he said he's not really all that worried about Eric Fisher in this game specifically, but the long-term concerns about his back, that matters. That's something I hadn't thought of. I hadn't equated him with Dontari Poe yet, but Dontari Poe was not the same after his back injury. Just a different player entirely. I have a little bit of fear about Eric Fisher with that. Having a guy in the trenches have a long-running, nagging back injury is, a very realistic fear to have. So I'm concerned for that. Also the offensive line, if Eric Fisher does not play tonight, and we haven't gotten inactive as far as I can tell. Hold on, breaking news here. Breaking news on Derek Carr. Jack Del Rio says he has a fracture. He's out 2 to 6 weeks. That just came down from Vic Taffur, T-A-F-U-R, V-I-C-T-A-F-U-R, on Twitter. Covers the Raiders for The Athletic in San Francisco, as it appears. It looks like he's just grabbing the most recent news out of Jack Del Rio. That is, that's some surprising real news there. So we're going to get multiple games of EJ Manuel. Let's check out the Raiders' schedule really quick. They've already been, as I mentioned earlier, they've already been a team, excuse me, that's been struggling on both sides of the ball. And now we look ahead versus the Ravens, versus the Chargers, versus the Chiefs at home on Thursday Night Football. Carr is out at least 2 weeks, out 2 to 6. It looks like the Chiefs are probably going to avoid Derek Carr 3 weeks from now. Have you seen anything else pop up yet, Beards, from any other sources or anything?
I have not. I've been checking a little bit, and I haven't seen anything yet. He didn't say what kind of break it was or where it was.
Not that I've seen, just a fracture. I'm assuming it's a back. I guess it could be a rib, but the knee to the back made me think that it would be a vertebrae thing. So that's the news. Jack Del Rio says that Derek Carr has a fracture, out 2 to 6 weeks, and it looks like the Chiefs will probably be avoiding Derek Carr in Oakland 3 weeks from now.
I've got something from Ian Rappaport.
Okay.
Del Rio says Derek Carr has a transverse process fracture in his back, out 2 to 4 weeks.
2 to 4 weeks. Okay, Andrew, I see that too. Also, you made him Stephen Colbert. You took the RT and made it a he. I like that. I like Ian Rappaport. I think we need to stop putting the T in his name. Well, yeah. So this is huge. You look at the Raiders now, 2-2 after winning at Tennessee, beating the Jets at home. Then you lose at Washington, at Denver. I still think they might beat the Ravens in Oakland. on Sunday. I think that's actually still a possible victory. I would not be like putting any money on that game. But, oh no, Beards!
What? What happened?
Colin Kaepernick is still a free agent. Colin Kaepernick is still a free agent. Can you imagine how great that story would be? Oh my God. You get Marshawn Lynch and Colin Kaepernick on the same team.
I was just
team.
Thinking about Marshawn there.
Oh man. That would be the most interesting locker room in football by 150,000 miles. I only have 140 characters available on Twitter. And I really wish I had the 280 so I could have more exclamation points after the phrase Kaepernick time. I would be very, very surprised to see them actually go after Colin Kaepernick.
I kind of would too.
But EJ Manuel actually looked all right yesterday, surprisingly. He looked fine. But it looks like the Raiders are going to be without their starting quarterback for, and I'm seeing again, 2 to 6 weeks. 2 to 4 weeks, 2 to 6 weeks. I'm not going to pronounce the Raiders dead right now. Because they have the Ravens at home, and then the Chargers at home, and then the Chiefs at home. It's a pretty good three-game stretch there, because you're getting the Chiefs on a short week. It's the best possible place to get the Chiefs after dealing with the Steelers and then going to Oakland. This is extremely interesting. Because I think that's where we're at. The Raiders could still realistically win the next two games. I'm trying to tweet and talk at the same time, and it's very difficult.
But at least he'll be out probably until the Chiefs game, you think.
That's what it looks like, especially on a short week.
And with a back fracture?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound something...
2 weeks
that
for
you
a
don't
back
want to
fracture
mess with.
Is hard, yeah. 2 weeks for a back fracture seems really difficult. Yes, the next two games,
six
Ravens
sounds
and
about right. More than four does.
Yeah, I don't know how you get
it. I mean, I'm
back.
I'm no doctor.
Right, neither of us are back doctors, that's fair.
But just the word back fracture, the words back fracture put mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. not okay.
No.
Nope.
No, it's very bad news for a back. Having a back be fractured is a...
kind of a bad thing.
It's a very bad thing.
Yeah.
I'm
not
trying to
good.
See. I'm glad we have MLB Network on in here. I was on Twitter
because of all that sweet MLB news that we need now that
yeah,
the Royals
man.
Are eliminated.
Yeah, somebody.
The Royals season's over.
I have Monday Night Football pregame on one screen, which makes a whole lot of sense. And I was hoping I had NFL Network on the other one because they'd be talking about, you know, like Derek Carr's injury. And nope. Which team poses the biggest threat to the Indians in the ALDS?
The Royals. Oh wait,
fantastic. Yeah, this is big, though. So, I would be shocked to see him back for the Chiefs game. You're going to be 2.5 weeks in at that point. Brutal timing for Derek Carr. Brutal timing for the Raiders.
Do you honestly think they'd go for Kaepernick?
No, I'd be very surprised. I think they saw enough from EJ Manuel yesterday. He looked pretty good, even though they never ended up really putting up points. His receivers were letting him down. I think if they realistically, strangely enough, it's almost too short of a time window. If it was Carr out for 8 to 10 weeks, and you're looking at, oh, if we get in the playoffs, he comes back, then it would make a lot of sense. It makes sense, period. He's going to do more for you than Connor Cook or EJ Manuel. That is for certain, but I'd be pretty surprised to see that actually come through. You can do a little bit of projection here on the Raiders schedule. They're 2-2 now. Say they split with the Raiders and Chargers the next two home games because they don't have Derek Carr and they're a team that's already been struggling here. 3-3. Now, the biggest thing here obviously is looking at the Chiefs game in Oakland on Thursday night. I've been saying since the schedule came out, that game is going to be darn near impossible to come through on. Well, it seems
I'd say that it just got a little bit easier.
It just got a whole lot more plausible because all of a sudden it's EJ Manuel on the road on a short week instead of Derek Carr on the road in a short week. That's a big deal. That's a big shift. Trying to see if there's anything else here. Chris Mortensen said Carr was dubious post-game. He would be, quote, fine. The transverse process fracture and back spasms are not uncommon. Jock Durio says 2 to 4 weeks. Like, this is what Sam Mellinger just pointed out. The Chiefs play Oakland in 17 days. I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine that there's going to be a back fracture healed in 15 days.
Here's a fun little Twitter thread from John Middlecoff. He's okay. Apparently a former NFL scout, Bay Area radio host.
Okay.
His first tweet said, so Del Rio said post-game Carr had back spasms, then Carr acted shocked because he didn't know that. Today he has a fracture. Then he retweeted himself and then said, something doesn't add up. Why would Del Rio, who never says anything about injury, say that? Bad look for him. Makes no sense.
That is interesting that he would say back spasms and he should be fine. I didn't know that Carr was visibly surprised by that. I did think for a second, well, it's a very bold thing to say that a guy is going to be fine. Talking about a couple of days. And now we see this where it's going to be weeks, including the Chiefs game. So very, very unfortunate timing for the Raiders. But by some sort of transverse property, I think, it's good news for the Chiefs. It's good timing for the Chiefs as Derek Carr is out for almost certainly the next three games, and that third game is against the Chiefs. So the Raiders have three home games, two of them against really terrible teams, the Ravens and the Chargers. Then the Chiefs get a chance to go knock off Oakland on the road. Just huge, a huge, unfortunate catch of timing for the Raiders. And again, good news for the Chiefs by way of that timetable. All right, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to make sure we've got all of our ducks in a row. We'll talk a little bit more about tonight's game, and then eventually we're going to play that sound about how I got the Royals completely right. I'm going to stay humble about it, though.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I wonder if we could, like, set up an elaborate role-play scenario where we would just call in and give your best post-game question, and then I would be Ned Yost and try to answer them as well as I could.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Talk about a Soria's performance there in the third.
Talk about! Don't ask me a talk about question! I'm bleeping Ned Yost!
On ESPN Kansas City.
Listen, I thought Jack really had a good outing. Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports. This beat caught me off guard a little bit. It's crazy. It really is. It's insane. And the song is insane. Everything is nuts. But I like it as bump music. It's funky and weird, and I'm into it. All right, welcome back to the show. Derek Carr is out for probably 2 to 4 weeks. That's the report right now. 2 to 6 was another one. But here's some interesting things to keep an eye on. Bill Barnwell says that Cam Newton also came back from a similar transverse process fracture after his car crash in 2014. He missed one game in 2014, according to Ian Rappaport, or as Beards coined him, Ian Rappaport. He said that in 2014, Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo suffered the transverse process fracture. He missed one game. The Raiders are hoping that it's the same for Derek Carr. But as Sam Mellinger pointed out, the Raiders and Chiefs play in 17 days, and that feels like a quick turnaround. And the Chiefs would be very fortunate to avoid Derek Carr whenever they go to Oakland for Thursday Night Football. I would love to see EJ Manuel in that matchup. I would think that the Raiders would just let him at least sit these next 2 weeks and see if they can't shoot to get him back for the Thursday Night game. I think EJ Manuel might actually be competent enough to win against the Ravens or the Chargers. Neither of those teams are very good at all. Now, also the Raiders, especially minus Derek Carr, aren't that good either. But the Raiders probably have the best receiver out of those three teams, being the Raiders, the Ravens, and the Chargers, although Keenan Allen has an argument to make, and Amari Cooper's been subpar. They have probably the second best running back in that group, Melvin Ingram, or Melvin Gordon, excuse me. The quarterback situation now seems a whole lot darker for the Raiders. The defenses there all have their ups and downs. Those are three very, very, very flawed teams. The Raiders were a flawed team before this injury news came through. So something very interesting to keep an eye on. as we go forward. All right, let's go ahead and talk about tonight's game before we shift gears into talking about the Royals a little bit. We talked to Nick Jacobs earlier, and I keep trying to get to these points. He said that there are two things that Nick said that really stick out to me. Washington runs on first down, and you've got to get pressure up the middle on Kirk Cousins. Inside pressure is going to dictate the flow of this game. For me, I would say that ideally a large portion of that inside pressure would just obviously come from the guys that line up inside. Benny Logan's been really good this year. Chris Jones has been really good this year. You get some inside action from Raheem Nunez-Rochez and Alan Bailey. The Chiefs have some absolute maulers in that front three, and being able to get pressure with only three or four guys is a huge, huge unbalancing factor that's going to throw off any offense. So I'm optimistic for those reasons. I would like to see Justin Houston used creatively, but not creatively and like, ooh, let's drop him back along with seven other players. We'll drop eight, rush three, and we'll just keep Houston back here, just sort of scooting around and making Kirk Cousins unsure what to expect. I don't really care for that. I'd like to see Justin Houston let loose in this game, and also spending some of his time maybe trying to get some space cleared up in front of him by Benny Logan, and then getting some pressure up the middle. That's what I'm looking for from this Chiefs defensive line. I think if the defensive line wins their matchups, the Chiefs are going to win this game. Not necessarily handily, but confidently, if that makes any sense. And I also would love to see more Justin Houston. It seems like every week, a little bit less last week. Last week, the adjustment wasn't really there, but especially week one and week two, we saw Bob Sutton doing a lot of adjusting at halftime when Justin Houston went from being used as a zone coverage guy to being used as, you know, the pass rushing monster that is Justin Houston. I'd like to see him get a little bit more aggressive there tonight. Also, with Washington running on first down, they have sort of their trio of running backs, and I know that there are some matchup concerns. I'm not particularly afraid of any of the guys that are running out there. Rob Kelly and Samaje Perine do not scare me. The name that's been kind of dropped around these last couple of days is Chris Thompson, because he's the more versatile running back here. I think he's one of their, we talked about this on Friday, and I should remember, but I don't. He's one of their top receiving options also, especially out of the backfield. I understand why that might be something that you look at as you're looking for talking points in this game, but I'm just not that worried about it. I think this defensive line is really good. I think that even the inside linebacking group is actually getting better as we go, because Derek Johnson's getting back to speed. Meek Wilson seems to be improving at a steady pace. You got guys like Akemi Oligwe who are getting used to being NFL players. For me, the biggest concern is at the other outside linebacker spot, whenever it comes especially to stopping the run on first down. Dee Ford is out, and that means bad things for that edge pressure. But based off what Nick said, based off what I've seen from these two teams, I'm a little less worried about outside pressure than I am about having some consistent stops there. Frank Zombo is not going to pressure Kirk Cousins. That's not his game. But he's an upgrade as far as run stopping at that position in the absence of Dee Ford. No Dee Ford, replace him with Frank Zombo. I can live with that. I think that's going to actually help the Chiefs' run defense. It's going to make their pass rush worse. Yet another reason why the Chiefs absolutely have to let Justin Houston free. He has some ground to make up. But if they line up four guys to get pressure, being Houston, Bailey, Benny Logan, and Chris Jones, Or sometimes Raheem Nunez-Rochez, because Chris Jones is still getting up to speed. If they can get pressure with those four guys, this game is going to be, it's going to be a hurricane. Ooh, horrible, horrible choice of words.
Not your best.
No, really terrible. I think I thought tornado and then said hurricane for some reason. Yeah, bad call. Bad call by me. That one's on me. If those four guys get pressure, this game is going to be very fun for Chiefs fans. There we go. Also, David Hellman points out at Hellman DC on Twitter. He said Derek Carr's diagnosis from he's okay to he's out for a prolonged period of time is exactly what happened with Romo last summer. And that's a good point. This is sort of a revisiting of that issue. Also, Scott chimes in. Scott Chasen at Chasen Scott on Twitter, friend of the show, says also Derek Carr has been pretty horrible versus Kansas City, so it's fine either way. That's true. That's a good call. I don't believe that Bob Sutton just has the key codes to shutting down Derek Carr. I'd rather see EJ Manuel than Derek Carr out there for sure. But the fact that the Chiefs are going to have a really, really good chance on Thursday night, I think it only helped by EJ Manuel being the quarterback and all the flaws we've seen out of this Oakland team so far. Also, apparently Randy Moss got Kansas City barbecue on a suit jacket today at the Monday Night Football pregame show. That's exciting. A couple of matchup things. One name we haven't discussed at all yet for Washington, I don't know if I've said his name this whole week, which is an oversight by me, is Josh Norman. He is such a good cornerback and such a fun cornerback. Washington had Monday Night Football last week. Oh, God. It was Raiders-Washington. That's why I watched that game, because it was those two teams. Beards, you nodded whenever I mentioned Josh Norman. Did you happen to see him after the game last week?
I don't think so.
He was...
I probably did, but I don't. It's not popping off the top of my head, so go ahead, and I'll probably go, oh, that's right.
He was just, you had to hear him. You had to hear him on the TV broadcast.
Then no.
He was intoxicatingly excited about just, like, life in general.
Isn't that his normal state, though?
I guess so. But it was just, I was sitting there after the game last Monday night and just was just like, well, I want this guy to win. I want him to win. I want his team to win. I want to root for him. I want him to be this happy all the time. I'm backing off on that this week.
That's probably good.
Yeah, but he's such a good player, and just was such an interesting post-game interview last week. I was very surprised by that. The way that he deals with Tyreek Hill is going to be fascinating, because he is one of the best corners in the game, but he doesn't have Tyreek Hill's speed. I think eventually we're going to see Tyreek Hill simply line up and get that one-on-one coverage because they trust Josh Norman. And I think you're going to see Tyreek Hill with his speed eventually just outrun Josh Norman. It won't be big windows. I don't think he's going to beat Josh Norman for a 30-yard touchdown like we saw last week. But I think if he decides, or whatever, Andy Reid decides to let Tyreek Hill try to outrun Josh Norman, I think he'll successfully do that. It'll be a tight window, and we'll see if Alex Smith is willing to put it out there. But that's something to keep an eye on. Also, as we've said, this offensive line is uncertain. We're 2 hours away from kickoff right now, and we don't have an inactives yet, which seems a little surprising. Here we go. Okay, Adam Teicher, boom, 1 minute ago. Look at this, man. Live radio. Ain't nothing like it. Adam Teicher says, it looks like left tackle Eric Fisher is preparing to play for the Chiefs tonight. Fisher missed the last 2 days of practice because of back spasms. Oh, God, back spasms. That's terrifying. So it looks like Eric Fisher will be out there tonight. Hopefully that's the case. His offensive line is simply better with him. And now the Chiefs are going to be dealing with only Zach Fulton replacing Mitch Morse. If Fisher wasn't out there, it could be Schwartz at left tackle, Witzman at right tackle, Fulton at center, LDT at right guard, and then at left guard would be maybe Parker Anger if he's active tonight. If not, Cam Irving gets put in somewhere. Like, there's literally every position on this offensive line, except for LDT, could be different than it was opening day if Fisher does not play tonight. But it sounds like he's out there getting ready to play for tonight, so that's good news. Also, Greg Rosenthal points out the positive for Oakland is that EJ Manuel looked good in limited action against the Raiders. In limited action, and the Raiders faced a 30th-ranked scoring offense on Sunday against the Baltimore Ravens. Something else to keep in mind. The offensive line is something to keep an eye on, because we've seen as the offensive line gets slightly unstabler, I'm going to make that a word, then Alex Smith seems to get hugely more uncomfortable as that progresses. As there's any chaos, it seems like Alex Smith kind of overreacts with nervousness. I think that's a fair enough thing for me to say. I'm going to go ahead and roll with that. I think that's fair. I really do. I want to be fair to Alex Smith, and I think that's fair. I think he overreacts, overpanics, checks down too soon whenever he doesn't believe in the offensive line in front of him. Washington has a good front seven. They're going to be able to get pressure on the Chiefs like they got pressure on Derek Carr last week on Monday night. I think it's something that you've got to be openly, actively concerned about. At the same time, I think it will work out on a wide scale, I suppose. I do think the Chiefs win tonight. I think they win 27-20. That's the score that I think if they're not 3 weeks in a row, and I'm going to go ahead and live with that. If they do win this game, I do think it will be largely how Alex Smith looked in week two or three. The Patriots pass rush never got to him, and that gave him one of the most kind of risky games of his career, one of his two best games in Kansas City as the quarterback here. I don't expect to see that kind of performance. I think he'll be kept upright enough. I don't think Ryan Kerrigan's going to live in his back pocket. But I do think there's a very good chance that he's hassled around enough to make him nervous, and a nervous Alex Smith does also make me nervous. Maybe exponentially. Maybe Alex Smith is to pass rush as I am to Alex Smith. Ever think about that? My voice is running out. My ability to breathe is decreasing. My energy level is draining. 24 more minutes. 24 more minutes of this golden radio to get through. We only have one more commercial break to take before the end of the show, right, Beards? Beards gives me a thumbs up because he doesn't know this is radio.
It's also visual, but I didn't have the camera switched over to me, yeah, so it's completely moot. But that's okay. It was just meant for you.
But since I asked you that question, my nose is getting stuffy. I'm getting congested. Oh, God, I can't breathe. Also, huge thanks, shouts out to Beards McFly here for just letting me drown in the silence as I obviously reach for my cough button and try to just like clear the passageways that, you know,
I told
I
you
to
just
breathe
do it into
through.
The mic.
I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna blow my nose into the microphone. You are worthless. You are worthless whenever it comes to bailing me out for long enough to blow my freaking nose. Let me ask you a question. If your life depended on it, and I said, all right, Beards, you have to turn off my microphone and you have to talk for 45 straight seconds, what would you talk about?
Are you going to play this game with me right now?
I'm curious what your topic would be.
Probably NBA stuff, since this is, you know, a sports talk radio station.
Turn off my microphone and talk about the NBA for 45 seconds.
Oh, are we going to play this game?
Right now.
Okay, hold on. We're gonna do 20. I'm gonna get the shot clock.
Okay, fine. This is the game then, and it's not a game. It's born of necessity. I can't breathe.
All right, 24 seconds. You ready? All right,
kill my mic. Hit your shot clock. Talk about the NBA till the buzzer goes.
Okay. So, Dwayne Wade signed with Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't think that really has that much impact. Basically, the reason that Cleveland got their butts handed to them last year in the finals was because of the fact that their defense was terrible. Let me switch the camera over so we can have this conversation face-to-face. Golden State's really freaking good. They've won on average 69 games over the last 3 years. They're going to be good. They're going to be exceptionally good. 24.
And right at that same moment, I shot my used tissue into the trash can.
Did you make it? That's the only thing that matters.
And I laid that baby in. What? LeVar Ball just said that he's pulling Junior LaMelo from Chino Hills and will homeschool him the next 2 years and train him.
You know there's a third brother, right? There's the middle one that nobody talks about.
So I was homeschooled throughout all of the younger years, and then I kind of did like half homeschool, half like private school kind of thing for high school, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't think LeVar Ball should be allowed to homeschool his children. I just don't think that's okay.
It's not a great idea.
I think I know too much about LeVar Ball to think that he should be allowed to homeschool his kids.
Well, this isn't also going to be like a homeschool situation. It's going to be basketball camp homeschooling. There will be no academic learning in this homeschooling situation.
He's going to have to graduate from high school.
Oh, I know, but it's just going to be very basic.
I think there's some sort of like certification you got
to
go.
Do you need to graduate high school to get into college on a basketball scholarship?
I don't know. Do you?
Let's do some research.
That's an interesting question. I would think so. But it was Eric Sonheimer who tweeted that news about LeVar Ball. I think.
Most community colleges and some private colleges will admit you if you don't have a high school diploma or GED.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Now, whether or not the NCAA will allow that, that is a whole different question.
Oh, the NCAA, the emperor has no clothes.
Hey, man, UCLA apparently has, like, a standing offer for him. So that might change.
No clothes. Naked emperor. The NCAA is a naked emperor. What a farce.
So was this whole academics or NCAA scandal, like, them getting their invisible clothes taken away from them? Or how's this analogy work?
It's a great question. Remember the people are listening to this because it's Chiefs talk. It makes me laugh every time. Okay, let's take this analogy to its logical conclusion. I think the NCAA has never had clothes, but just now this scandal was the emperor going outside
and realizing.
No, the emperor doesn't get it yet. This is the emperor going outside and saying, "Hello, my loyal subjects, look at my beautiful robe. Manufactured by Adidas." And then everybody looked at the emperor and just went, "Oh God, he's naked. The emperor has no clothes." And see, in this analogy, clothes are a metaphor for, like, moral high ground.
Makes sense. I was trying to work in a way of, like, paying in that scenario, but it's like,
I think I got about as close as I could get
that,
by
I think that works.
By using Adidas as the manufacturer of the invisible robe, the non-existent robe.
And he's on like a Nike sled or something.
A sled?
Well, I'm...
What the hell do you mean a sled?
Well, I don't know why I said
like a
sled.
Toboggan?
No.
Is he going down a snowy mountaintop?
No, just like the throne on the poles. That will get
it's not
carried.
A sled.
I know. I don't know why I said sled.
You former history major, what's that
I know.
Called? What
I
is
can't
that called?
Think of it. I can't think of it.
It's what God made Google.
That is true.
Here, I'm gonna intersperse some Chiefs talk. Nick said that he didn't think that the Chiefs regret putting Tom Bahatli in the pup list. I tend to agree with that. But the position is just so thin right now with no Daddy Nicholas and with no Tom Bahali. Now Frank Zombo is probably starting tonight. That's terrifying. Tano Pastino doesn't seem to be ready yet. I think they could have probably sort of replaced Tomba being the guy who joins the team late in the season. They could have, instead of doing that, they could have basically made Tano Pastino the guy who doesn't ever get a snap until like week 8, until he gets what's going on. And then he becomes... The guy that is all of a sudden exploiting everything else around him.
Gestatorial chair.
A what?
A gestatorial chair.
I had no idea.
Italian chair for carrying.
You could have given me 50,000 guesses. I mean, I guess you could have given me like 50 million guesses. I don't know if I've ever heard that phrase in my life.
I don't think I had either.
Is there another?
It was originating from the papacy. It was for popes.
Interesting. This has been Chiefs pregame here on ESPN Kansas City.
We talked NBA for...
Man, listen, I'm sorry. I had to blow my nose.
I know.
If you want to hear those nose blows in person, come to Pegas out at Transformation Parkway in Antioch Wednesday from 4 to 6, broadcasting live.
We should also point out the fact that we do not have a show Thursday or Friday.
That's
because
correct.
We are being replaced by baseball.
That's true. I fully intend on later in life returning the favor and running baseball out of town for some reason or another.
You're just going to cancel... all baseball nationally, and
yeah.
You're just going to be there instead?
Yeah, the thing I look forward to now more than anything else in life is figuring out what I could eventually bump to a smaller network.
So you've moved on from yelling at little kids.
No, that's still, It's kind of all in one. It's kind of an all in one. I want to do a sports talk radio show.
Where you yell at kids after from, you've bumped somebody else off the air.
No, from that place at the Renaissance Festival. They've got the whole, it's a TV show shot like that.
Oh, okay. I got you now.
Where I'm just yelling takes about other people's favorite teams. Just bringing like a Raiders fan. I'm just like, your defense sucks, your quarterback's back.
You
whatever.
Just hear the splat of a tomato, then it's, Alex Smith sucks!
Right, exactly. And then that show, as good as it would be, just bumps like ALDS game one to ESPN news.
Ouch.
Yeah, man. That's my
That's
goal.
Cruel.
It is cruel. That whole
ESPN
cruel.
3. It's even worse.
It's the future.
It's all online.
The future. The future is I am it. The future is me. And I will make baseball go extinct. Last Chiefs thing, whenever we come back, we're going to talk about baseball. I think the Chiefs win by about a touchdown. Got to get into your pressure from this defensive line. Got to get Justin Houston after Kirk Cousins. Alex Smith has got to be able to take a few deep shots here. He's got to be able to push the ball downfield in order to open up everything else. You go to Tyreek Hill downfield, especially Tyreek Hill. You get Travis Kelce back into the game plan. Then you have Kareem Hunt, who, by the way, if Kareem Hunt rushed for 0 yards tonight, he would still be the NFL's leading rusher. How bat bleep is that? Prediction, he will not rush for 0 yards tonight.
He'll have at least one.
Hot take, yeah. I'll say he gets double digits, at least.
That's fair. Why not triple digits? Why stop there?
Well, because at that point, it's an actual prediction. I don't want to actually give an actual prediction. I do think the Chiefs win tonight, though. Oh, man, there's a late, like, there's just like a white woman in a headdress out there. And I really thought we were going to get through this whole week without ever talking about the fact that this is just like the racial slurs bowl.
Chiefs isn't terrible.
And it's unfair. The Chiefs isn't a racial slur, but it is mascotting of like a race of humanity, which is kind of bleeped up. I had somebody ask me on Twitter, like, do you have that same problem with the Vikings? I was like, well, no, because like there aren't Vikings around right now. And also the nation that currently like plays football didn't wipe out the Vikings. We have the Native American problem is a little more,
yeah,
a little more present. And like, there are still Native Americans.
Never mind.
Like, it's not. Go ahead. What were you gonna say? You're a history major. Go ahead, history major. Help us out.
Nope, I'm good.
Why? What were you gonna say?
I don't even remember what I was gonna say.
Oh, you're a liar.
I am a liar.
Say it. Say the thing.
We need to go to break.
Say the thing you're gonna say, and we'll go to break after that.
Now I really don't remember what I was going to say.
Mother! Say it. We can play this game of chicken. It's bad radio for both of us. We're collectively producing a terrible radio show right now because you won't say the thing you're going to say. I want to know what you're going to say.
I don't remember what I was going to say now, honestly. Well, that was just uncalled for. You're running out of stuff to throw at me over there, you know.
My coffee cup is next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
This show is for some people. I don't know if any of them are currently listening, but there is a type of person that just loves this show. We just have to find a few of them.
With Joshua Briscoe.
And they have to all be very rich and powerful. So they fund this show.
On ESPN Kansas City.
I don't think I've ever been more confident in anything in my life other than what you just heard me say there. This show is for some people. But I have no idea. I have no idea if they're listening or not. It's almost game time, sort of. It's almost the end of the show, and that's just good as we can do here. Two other NFL notes before we go to something Royals related. We should be getting the inactives in a few minutes. Hopefully we will have those before the end of the show. We'll see. And Greg Rosenthal says the Patriots are giving up 60 more yards per game than any other NFL team. That's hilarious. The Patriots might have the worst defense in football. Lol. In case you missed it last night, the Royals season ended. And I went back in time to what's the date on that, Beards? Does it say?
April 2nd.
I'm trying to go back and figure out when game one. Was that the day before spring. Hold on. April 3rd was the first game of the season. They lost to the Twins. So this is the day before the season begins. I want to go back in time a little bit. I want you to hear some of the things that I said about the Royals. I promise this isn't going to be some super dramatic, overproduced pat on my own back. I would never do something like that. This is just a very subtle, low-key thing that I thought was, you know, worth sharing. But the Royals are currently probably the third best team in the division. They can't get off to a bad start and be looking up the whole season. In every game where there are like stat lines, Mario is always average at everything. He's the main character. He can't have any overwhelming deficiencies. Good everywhere, fine everywhere, but he doesn't have any like incredible strength other than his face on the ground. And I've had that feel about this Royals team for a while now. I have like an overwhelming sense of concern about what's coming up because I can't find anything that the Royals do really, really well. And I think you have to have something that you do really, really well to make yourself a contender. And I would much rather try to win with either of those extreme styles than to try to win with an entire team of Mario and Luigi and a bunch of Koopas. I feel like the Royals have a bunch of Koopas right now. I told you. I had it all right so much. I said that they're the third best team in the division. Remember when I did that? All right, listen. I mean, I probably missed something somewhere along the way. But I had that whole 500 thing for a while. You remember that happening? Again, very humble. Really, nothing to go out about. But I said over and over and over again they're going to be 500, and they ended up being 494.
Totally wrong.
I am within my margin of error. I'm going to count that as a W. I will not cower in fear. I will not cave to your rounding down. I said even during the hot streaks they're a 500 baseball team and they ended up being 494. I am very sad to see all these guys heading out. We'll talk about the Royals more this offseason, I'm sure. A lot of interesting decisions for them to make. But now we go back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Monday Night Football, prime time. The Chiefs have a chance to be the NFL's only 4-0 team. We'll talk about it tomorrow here, 4 to 6 p.m.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.